Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
And this is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ali. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Owen and this week I'm joined by Hexania. Hey, how's it going?
Hey there, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here.
Very, very, very welcome. How are you today?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's not the hottest day of the year, but it is getting there. It's going to be like 34 degrees here today in the UK, and I'm already feeling it. I am very, very hot.
Oh, stop it. I'm jealous. It's so cold here. Like in Moscow right now, like you can't really tell it's summer. Like it's so cold. It's horrible.
But it looks so bright where you are. Like the room you're in looks really bright.
It is bright, but it's like plus 18 or something Celsius. For July, like for the end of July, come on.
Well, we're going to dive into the main broadcast of this show, talking about Asuka's Raw Championship run and asking the question, was it a little bit pointless? Here is the show. Let's talk about Asuka. So I kind of started to like collate together Asuka's championship run. And it went like this. She won the title at Money in the Bank, effectively. You know, we thought it was for the briefcase. Turns out it was actually for the title. So people thought she was handed the title. She then lost to Charlotte Flair. She beat Nia Jax via a screw referee. She then beat Charlotte Flair due to Nia Jax interference earlier in the night. She lost to Ziggler and Sasha Banks. She lost to Sasha Banks and Bayley. She then beat Bayley. She then lost to Sasha Banks and Bayley. She had the no contest with Sasha Banks, and then she lost to Sasha Banks. So it's not the most sterling championship run I've ever seen.
Yeah, not the most efficient one, I would say. But the thing is, when we found out that the title was inside the briefcase, I thought it was a really good idea. I actually enjoyed it. But then it went downhill from there. And at this point, I'm so scared to upset the Sasha fans because they are like the most savage in the entirety of wrestling Twitter. But
I'm one of those people, by the way.
Yeah. But I feel like at this point in that storyline, I feel like that was completely unnecessary. I feel like it wasn't needed. I feel like Sasha was enough without the title.
Mm-hmm. But so why do you think that WWE never really, because like all the reports were that Vince loved Asuka and thought that she was like a really, really great talent, but it never felt like they were treating her seriously as the champion.
Yeah, and I feel like there has been this, well, I wouldn't say a rumor, but like some sort of a notion that we've developed with time that WWE doesn't seem to know how to treat foreign wrestlers. Booking-wise, and I don't know if there's a logical explanation to that, but I feel like there have been several wrestlers that have fallen victim to that already, and I feel like Asuka is one of them.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, it kind of sucks, really, that this was the extent of Asuka's championship run, because, like, as a fan myself, I have been waiting for like that Asuka run. You know, she won the title at TLC a couple of years ago, but then just lost it to Charlotte Flair a couple of months later because they felt that Charlotte Flair was the more important thing. So that kind of sucked for Asuka there. So we're like, okay, well, maybe there'll be another time when Asuka can get a championship run. And we thought with Becky Lynch gone, with Charlotte Flair seemingly on the out, with Ronda Rousey gone, now was the time to do it. And specifically, Charlotte Flair was over in NXT. But even then, it felt like, you know, Charlotte Flair was very much the focus of the Raw women's division. And now that she's gone, that focus has switched to Banks and Bayley. And I'm a big, big fan of the Sasha Banks and Bayley team. But kind of like as you were saying, I don't know if they also needed... I don't know whether I could say that I don't know if they needed the Raw women's title, because I actually really wanted Sasha Banks to win. But... because I think there was like the two man.
You're one of those, right?
I kind of am. Like, you know, I want something, they give it to me, and I'm like, no, I think that was wrong, actually. So I kind of like I dig that that Sasha won. I think what bugs me and irks me is that it was Asuka's run was just never treated seriously whatsoever.
Yeah, and Asuka's whole situation with any title is basically like that, maybe with the exception of the. Of her NXT time, but even their tag team run with Kairi, it was kind of not here, not there. We barely ever saw them on TV. And I remember how people were even forgetting who the women's tag team champions were.
Yeah.
And it's literally none of her fault. Like, she's great as a champion, I feel like. But it just somehow doesn't, you know, doesn't happen the right way. And it still doesn't.
So what do you think could be next for Asuka now?
Honestly, at this point, I have no idea, because Kairi left, like the Kabuki Warriors are unfortunately done for. She's lost the title. So maybe she could go the Charlotte way and maybe go back to NXT, because I feel like that would be one of the only ways to maybe rebuild her credibility at this point. But I'm really not sure if WWE will actually proceed with that.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. So the Eric Young did an interview recently where he said, it was yesterday, in fact, I think he did it, or a couple of days ago, where he said that he was in talks with Triple H, and Triple H had told him that he was also going to be moving back to NXT. And we've seen Balor go back, Killian Dane went back as well. So there is like this precedent for people to go back. And I think that Asuka could do some amazing stuff down in NXT. But I think for my money, the way I would like to see this storyline like progress next is for Asuka to win the belt back at SummerSlam. Like, you can play off the fact that Sasha Banks hasn't really defended singles titles very well. So you play into this, you know, the storyline, and you can build a character around that for Sasha Banks. Before then, yeah, she sort of falls victim to Asuka, and Asuka can finally get the big win over Sasha Banks after being screwed out of wins over her on two separate occasions.
I mean, yes, that could be an option. But the problem that I see with this is I feel like if we stay like in the same storyline situation, if Bayley and Sasha are heels, right? It wouldn't be like the best thing to do for Asuka, because we know that Sasha fans are very vocal and are very influential, I guess you could say. And this has been this like thing that people have been really upset that Sasha, even though she's had title opportunities and she's held titles, her reigns have been short, and they have been like also, I guess you could say, maybe not that memorable to some people. And if she proceeds to lose the title also pretty soon and to a babyface, the people wouldn't really get behind said babyface. So that wouldn't really make sense.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I think one of the reasons why I'm so into the Banks-Bayley act at the moment, it is, you know, I mean, Bayley's doing amazing work, but it's almost primarily around Sasha Banks. Yeah. I just think, like, I've been wanting to see that NXT Sasha Banks, that boss Sasha Banks, since her main roster call-up, and we haven't really had it. So, like, now I'm finally getting my boss. I'm getting my Sasha Banks that I fell in love with many years ago. And I do want to see her have a long run, but at the same time, this is a typical WWE fan, wrestling fan. It's like, I want Sasha Banks to be the champion, but I also want Asuka to be the champion.
Yeah, and I feel like... you're right that you're saying that it's centered around Sasha. Like, Sasha is the star of the brand right now. And ever since they reunited, there has been this, like, unresolved tension of, is Sasha going to turn on Bayley? When? And throughout this entire time, we're, like, sitting, like, on the edge of our seats waiting for it to happen. And I feel like maybe that would be the next turn, even before Asuka gets to, you know, gets a title opportunity again.
Mm. Right, well, let's move over to AEW and NXT and their ratings war. So AEW picked up the win. I know, right? AEW picked up the win this week, despite having a loaded show with two title matches and every champion in action. Dynamite's audience was down 8.5% from last week. And in the 18 to 49 demo, they averaged a 0.3 rating, which is down from last week. And it was ranked sixth in the cable category. NXT, on the other hand, was up 15% from last week. Very, very good week for them. And they averaged a 0.18 rating and finished 28th. In the important demo. The key to NXT's resurgence, according to the Wrestling Observer, was that over 50s category. But this, I thought, was very, very interesting. The total audience of 1.48 million viewers was higher than the third hour of Raw this week, and the combined 18 to 49 rating beat the three-hour average of Raw. Those numbers would have been unthinkable just a few months ago. And they've just had the investors call with Vince McMahon and WWE. And one of the investors asked, like, you know, why are Raw's ratings so bad at the moment? And Vince was like, it's COVID. People aren't interested in this. And so someone then asked, well, AEW and NXT numbers haven't been affected that much. And his comment was, they're new.
I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, it kind of makes sense, right? I mean... and not the COVID thing, of course, but their New Year thing, because I mean, they are, and they are fresher, and they are, like, very much on the wave, you know. But the thing is, like, I'm one of those fans who's like, oh, like, stop comparing ratings, just enjoy wrestling. But then I, like, low-key check the ratings, and I'm low-key happy when AEW wins. Like, I'm rooting for AEW. But it's crazy that they surpassed Raw in this one factor, right? And literally, I think 3 days ago, I had this poll pop up on my Twitter feed. Like, do you think Raw ratings will go lower than 1 million? And I was like, no. But then this happened, and it's like, it's really, you know, it's fun to keep up with. Like, it's fun to watch because... we are obviously not WWE or AEW employees yet. but, you know, to us, we still hold some sort of, like, an emotional connection to one or the other or both. And it's really fun to watch it this way because the way that we see the ratings kind of change and surpass each other, it's really a sign of the industry developing, right? Isn't it? But, of course, it would be way more optimistic if Raw ratings weren't dropping, but, like, NXT and AEW ratings were catching up with it. That would be way more fun and better for everyone of us. But in the end of the day, as they level, we get a more diverse product. We get a more diverse field in where there are more, you know, equal, in a way, competitors. So I think in the end of the day, it could be really good for the industry.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on this one. Like, I am one of those people that, like, I get why people say, we shouldn't look at the ratings. We should just enjoy the product. But I love it. I absolutely love diving into the numbers. Like, it really does take me back to my youth of just, like, you know, waiting for the Raw and Nitro numbers to come out. But even, like, you know, the TNA when they went over to Spike and be like, oh man, what was the rating they had on Monday night? Oh dear, it was terrible again. Like, I kind of really dig it. But I also think it's kind of important for us as fans, and particularly if you are in the sort of this realm of being a fan where you are, like, deep diving and you're watching people like us, watching people like you on YouTube, where it kind of shows you what the trends of the TV product are going to be. You know, it's going to be if these ratings are doing well, if these people are doing well in the ratings here, they are going to get pushed.
And, you know, I'm a PR professional. I have a master's degree in PR. So demographics are everything. And when I create content for my channel or when I try and, you know, maintain my social media image or this stuff, I take this structured approach. So to me, it's really important to know what kind of people watch the product that they make my content about. So it's really very hard for me to stay away from that.
From a PR perspective, then, how do you think that both companies handle their PR?
Well, even it's a difficult question. Well, with this COVID thing, you know that there's been this whole entire crap show on the both sides of the spectrum, and with the testing stuff that we found out that WWE wasn't testing, and you know, I say it with the best intentions, you know, like my heart is in a good place, but when I discuss this whole WWE COVID thing, it really makes it look like they are trying to do basically the same thing as AEW, because AEW were the first ones to introduce a live crowd of sorts, like to put wrestlers there, right?
Yeah.
But then WWE tried to do that too, but somehow managed to take a good thing and make it dangerous. And make it like non, you know, like, I don't know how to say it, but the thing is, like, when we watch those WWE crowds that are basically NXT talent, right? They are standing there and they are social distancing. So they're standing like in a very awkward way. Then we know that they are uncomfortable. We know that they had to stand for hours on end. We know that they root for the people that they're supposed to root for. And again, compared to AEW, in AEW, we have basically heels rooting for heels, faces rooting for faces. But in WWE, we have this very like unrealistically homogenous crowd that cheers for the same people, which makes that in itself feel unnatural. But yeah, when I look at that crowd in WWE, I think about how those poor people had to stand there for hours without chairs. And I have been to WWE shows, I have been to WrestleMania, and I know that even if you're sitting there on a chair, you're tired. Like, it gets exhausting after like an hour and a half. And just standing without a place to sit, it sounds like my worst freaking nightmare. So it's really not fun to look at that. Like, I don't look at that crowd and think, yay, like, live crowd, how fun. I just look at it and I'm so sorry for those people.
It's really funny. So we were talking on our the Patreon podcast that we did a couple of days ago. Pete just moved into his new place and doesn't have a desk. So his workstation at the moment is on a breakfast bar that he can't sit at. So he has to stand at. And he was like, it is the worst because I'm standing up all day long and I hate it.
Yeah, he's basically experiencing the very same thing. The current WWE crowd. If you were to watch like Raw at that station, he would be immersed 100%. Oh, I'm so mean. I come off so mean. Like, what the hell?
No, you're not mean at all.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Lockdown has been hard on lots of people, but it's also been tough on, well, you know,
my big hairy balls, Luke.
Yes, your big hairy balls, Ollie.
So let's thank today's sponsor, Manscaped, for providing the best materials to give you the best manscaping experience possible. This could be the greatest ball shaving of all time.
Hygiene is super important in this, the new now. And the Perfect Package Essentials Kit by Manscaped comes with everything you need. High-performance USB rechargeable body trimmers with its advanced skin-safe technology, which is far more impressive than WWE's AI. Are nonsense at their pay-per-views.
It's not just your big hairy balls that need sorting out. You also need to look at your big hairy nails, or your long hairy nails, or your big long nails.
Along with the Perfect Package Kit, you should also order the Shears 2.0, a newly improved luxury four-piece nail kit with stainless steel slashed tipped tweezers, round point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file.
Enroll in the Peak Hygiene Plan for quarterly replenishments of your favorite products and get 20% off your order using the code WTTV.
There's even free international shipping to the US, Canada, Australia, and Old Blighty United Kingdom. So get 20% off your order at manscaped.com using the promo code WTTB.
That's manscaped.com with the code WTTV for 20% off your order. Your neat and tidy balls will thank you.
Right, well, let's dive into the Patreon mailbag. If you want to become a Patreon backer over at WrestleTalk, or if you want to submit a question to the Patreon mailbag, head on over to patreon.com/WrestleTalk and become a backer at any dollar amount and leave a comment in the community tab. Do not email me. I will just lose it. I'm bad at my job. Bobby Roth says, with the tacked on sixth episode out, the Last Ride documentary is now done. And what an emotional ride it was to see Reverend Grimm put himself through for such an industry he can't let go of. Despite the dead man's best efforts, the internet isn't convinced that Snarky Mark is done for good. My question is, if Jack the Gripper were to come back, who would you like to see him face? I think the obvious pick is Styles, but who do you think could get him the best out of Gnarly Charlie? So basically, yeah, if The Undertaker is going to have one more match, who would you like to be against?
I feel like there has been this like very much a fan favorite dream booking for Undertaker, which is a match against Aleister Black.
Mm.
So yeah, I would love to see that. Or maybe Bray Wyatt.
Yeah. So maybe get like the Fiend can actually get the revenge for the WrestleMania loss. That'd be quite good, actually.
Like I'm really into this like horror type gimmicks, and I want to go like full horror, you know, give me like dead man versus a weird guy in a dark room. Like I'll be sold.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if we I mean I'm pretty convinced we have seen the end of the Undertaker now, but like with those Saudi shows, like I think the Saudi prince can easily get him back out of retirement, and then we'll just sort of start the cycle all over again. But I just like, but the Boneyard match kind of showed that we can get another 10 years of Undertaker matches, really, with the way that they film it. Like, we can get all the matches that we really want. Yeah, totally.
And yeah, I feel like with that documentary, which I also found pretty interesting, but in a weird way, because to me, it didn't really paint a portrait of, like, the face of a generation of, like, this iconic wrestler, which, of course, Taker is. But I feel like this documentary kind of showed a bit of an unhealthy working relationship. Right? Like the way that they communicate, like he communicates with the corporate, right? To me, it looks kind of unhealthy. I'll stop at that. And we saw the cycle of him like having his quote unquote last match, not being happy with that. and then going back for another match. But then there's this other like flip side of the cycle where if he has a good match, he's like, oh, I still got it. Like, why not give it another try, another try, another try? So after the 1 yard match, which I think he was pretty happy with, right? And all of us were really happy with, well, the majority of us at least. Mm-hmm. I feel like the probability that he'll come back is there.
Yeah, I certainly think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've said this before on the podcast, but it still makes me laugh that I watched the first episode with my wife, who's not a wrestling fan, because like the reviews I'd heard was like, oh, it's even good for like non-wrestling fans to watch it. So I watched it with her and she said after the first episode, I cannot watch any more of this. It's too sad.
Oh my God.
It was too sad to watch this old man who can't move be forced into wrestling.
Yeah. Well, he's not technically forced.
No, but he's forcing himself into wrestling. Yeah. Abhiram said, I was wondering what you guys thought of JR calling out NXT and saying, why is there even a choice on Wednesday nights? DVR NXT, our S word is better. Excuse me. I think it's all fun and games, and most people are just saying that it's an AEW employee saying AEW is better, and there's nothing to be surprising there. However, Seth Rollins did something similar last year and got a lot of heat for it. Why do you think that is? I think the difference there is that JR, you know, is a AEW employee on an AEW show saying AEW was a better product. He wasn't, you know, but like Seth Rollins said it after a really bad show. Like he had a really bad show and then said,
and on social media,
we're the best wrestling on the planet. And everyone was like, ooh, after that show, mate. But he was, you know, he just came across quite poor in it. Like with JR, it just felt like, yeah, he's just a company man doing a company thing on a company product. Whereas Seth Rollins is just like, oh, I think you're being a bit of a dick, mate.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was sitting there while you were reading the question, and I was thinking, like, there is a difference, but I couldn't really make it into words. But then when you started talking, I was like, hey, it kind of clicked, because I feel like there's a big difference between saying that, oh, like our stuff or like our show or like our product is better, and saying that your show has the best wrestling in the world. Like there are two very different things, right? And also I feel like when you're like taking wrestling like as the aspect of the product, I guess you could say, like professional wrestling is a show, right? And wrestling in ring is like a part of it. And when you're taking that part and saying that this is the best in the world, that feels kind of inconsiderate. That feels like you're discrediting other, you know, stuff. And even like maybe the indies that even Rollins himself came from. And now we see WWE stars and WWE executives being kind of, you know, dismissive of the indies. Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, saying, oh, our show is better, it's like a way more broad statement.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And as you said, it's the employee of the company on the company show. He didn't go on Twitter and start a fight with someone over it. So I don't really see a problem here whatsoever. I thought it was funny, and I was like, hey, that's like an argument. Yeah, because I feel like it's easier to watch NXT after it airs than it is to watch AEW after it airs.
Yeah,
for most people.
Yeah, and also like he wasn't saying don't watch NXT.
Yeah,
he was like do watch it. Just DVR it.
He was like encouraging us to watch it. Actually, that's free advertising. Like what the hell?
RLT Sandwich says, I don't know if it was a super chat or a mailbag question a few weeks ago, but someone asked, like you were mentioning earlier, if you thought Raw would drop under 1 million in the ratings by the end of the year. Remember you saying no at the time? I agree with you, but now I'm not so sure. The ratings continue to fall despite the 3-week push after Heyman was removed, but they are flirting with or settling new record lows on what seems to be a weekly basis. On top of that, baseball, hockey, basketball, and as far as I know, American football is also making a return in the coming days, weeks, and months. So I would like to propose the question to you once more. Do you think Raw ratings will dip below 1 million viewers before the end of the year?
I mean, I already said that at this point, that's very much a possibility.
I didn't think it was possible, but like the more I'm starting to think about it, you know what, even then, like I think that Raw has got a dedicated audience. I think that sort of at 1.4 million that are tuning in, I think that is their base level audience. So kind of like how I think AEW has a 600,000 dedicated audience, and it's very rare that they will dip below that figure. So regardless of what show they put on, they should, in theory, always do over that 600,000. And I think that WWE might have that same number. It's like, it's 1.4 million. They're going to tune in no matter what product you put on. We saw it with TNA. No matter what product they put on, 1 million viewers were going to tune in and watch that show every week.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to drive away that dedicated audience.
Yeah, and that's why I want to say that the person who sent in the question mentioned other sports coming back. I really, really don't think it's a factor, because I don't feel like the audiences of classic traditional sports and wrestling intersect that much. So yeah. I don't really think there's a person who is like at the crossroads of watching either baseball or Raw. Like, that sounds unrealistic to me.
Because I think those people might exist, but it's like, if they've got the choice of watching Raw or baseball and they choose baseball, I think that means they're a baseball fan and
they
casually watch wrestling. Like, what we're sort of talking about here is that hardcore audience that is going to watch wrestling no matter what that product, what it is. Like, even if it's a football game that you're really into, you're like, actually, no, it's wrestling is what I want to watch. I need to watch Raw every week. So I still don't think it's going to happen, but I'll tell you what, you can record this moment, folks. I mean, it's on the internet, but you can record this moment. If we get to the end of 2020 and it has happened, you can play this back to me and I will eat some humble pie. Chris says, hi, guys. I hope you're doing well. My question is, should there be a rematch between The Fiend and Goldberg? Personally, I think there's a decent story there, and it would be quite satisfying to see Goldberg squashed. Have a lovely day. I don't think I want to see it again.
No. Like, that's... The first time it was unnecessary. I don't want to see the second time. Of course, like, if we're in this like perfect made-up reality where The Fiend squashes Goldberg, like, that could be okay, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Christopher Howell says, I've been thinking a lot about WWE's championships, particularly their top titles and tag divisions, and I genuinely believed if they unified the world titles, women titles, and tag titles, they would feel much more important. After all, the Universal title does not feel equal to the WWE championship. I know that it means champions would be appearing on both shows, but there is always going to be a crossover in the brand split, so why not give that privilege to all the top champions? In my opinion, it'd be like the NWA World's Champion traveling to territories back in the day. You can still keep brand exclusive titles to give each show an identity, but the top title should feel bigger if the champion has the right to appear on all shows, but also has more competition as a result. It adds more stakes to the titles. I mean, the champion, top guy or girl, gets more TV time, more exposure, and importantly, more money. I'm in agreement of this. Like, when they first did the brand split way, 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 way back when, sort of in the early 2000s, I liked the fact that your champion was just across both shows. Like, I thought that made sense. And it made sense to have two separate titles when you were doing separate pay-per-views, but now you're not doing separate pay-per-views anymore. So it almost feels redundant to have two world champions and two sets of tag team champions.
I feel like throughout like modern history of WWE, those like two main titles have never been equal. And I feel like it has never been the goal even. Like, there's really no point. Like, one title is, it's well known that it's like the primary title. Like, no one says it on air, but everyone knows that. And regarding unifying the titles, I don't know if that's a good idea. I mean, it might be a way to change things up, but there are this like phenomenons that happen in big companies. They're called corporate dysfunctions. And it's literally one of the corporate dysfunctions where you have, like, say, one huge, like, head office where everything, like, all the decision-making is situated in and concentrated in. And you go, like, oh, this is kind of hard to manage. Let's split it up into several offices. You do that. Some time passes. And you're like, oh, like, it's kind of hard to manage all those offices and all those like workers who work in different places and who have different managers. Let's merge it all together again. And that happens all over again. Every time, like, the time period that it happens within is different from company to company, but it's just like a classic thing that happens. And it's the same with WWE, with unifying titles. Yeah. So it's going to happen. But the thing is, it's not really going to change anything.
No, because in a couple of months, they'll just introduce another new world title and we'll start the process all over again. Irakli says, we all want to see FTR versus the Young Bucks, but who should win the match?
Ooh, I mean, I'm an FTR guy, so I'm going to have to go with FTR, and I think they would win it by tag rules. Like, you know, they had that segment on AEW this week where they were signing their contracts. It's like tag ropes have to be installed for their matches, and you know, the 10 count has to be enforced. So I think they will beat them with tag rules. I think that's how they'll get around.
That makes a lot of sense. But I also kind of found it a little weird that their whole like thing is enforcing tag team wrestling rules, right? But throughout their latest matches, they have been cheating a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of strange. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of FTR as well, like since the NXT days. So my answer would also be FTR because, yeah, as you said, that would make sense for them to kind of employ that whole shtick that they have. But also just because I want them to win. Because
Ride Dog Guy says, what legit injury do you think changed a wrestler's career the most? Obviously, excluding people like Owen and Droz. In my personal opinion, it's Finn Balor when he won the Universal Championship. That's such a good shout. Yeah, completely. Like that. Yeah. If he didn't have that injury, who knows where Balor would have been at this point. But yeah, that injury completely cost him. Same with, you know, the Revival coming in and getting injured right off the bat. Then coming back and the other one getting injured right off the bat. I think that really hurt them as well.
Yeah, I think when it comes to tag teams, that's always like the painful subject because, say, Authors of Pain are off TV right now because one of them is injured. So when you're in a tag team, like it's high risk, high reward, I guess you could say.
Flaming Live says, if you had to live in one of these following universes, which one would it be? The Empire of Star Wars, ruled by a dictator, corruption and magic users kill at will. The Year That Never Was in Doctor Who, Hell on Earth, The Master Rules All. Or the Star Trek Mirror Universe, racist, xenophobic, fascist, warlike, collapses in on itself. I'll be honest with you, Flaming Live, we are living in that world. We are living in Star Wars Mirror Universe.
Yeah. But and out of all of those, I've only watched Doctor Who. And that's not the option that I want to pick because I've seen that episode. But yeah, I guess we are kind of living in the Star Wars universe at this point.
Yeah, steering it. Yeah, living
I mean,
in.
I look like it today.
Yeah, rocking those buns. I am actually drinking out of a mug that has got my aunt brought me this back from Spain once. It's got this.
Oh, and I have my mug that I brought from New York.
Oh, lovely. New York. Oh, New York comes up so much on the Wrestle Talk Friday podcast. We had Alex on, we had SP3 on, both from New York. It's constantly coming up that
way. Hey, Alex.
Chris Gardner asks, you've got to build the best promotion you can using wrestlers from any company, but you have to take the entire division. And I can take one division from each company. For me, I'm going to take Impact's women's division, AEW's tag division, and NXT's males singles division. What are you picking?
That's a tough question.
I'm going to go AEW's tag division, I think, is...
Definitely.
And I think I'm going to take NXT's women's division.
You're just like reading my mind right now. Like the first thing that came to mind is NXT's women's division. I feel like it's the best one right now.
And if we are treating them as separate companies, which Chris has said we can, I think I'm going to take WWE's men's roster because it's so good. Like they've got like all the best guys. Like so, I think I'm going to take their men's division.
Like I'm kind of boring, but I second that. Like that again makes a lot of sense. And I thought of the NXT's women's division right off the bat. And again, yes, the AEW tag team division. All of my favorite tag teams and like the best tag teams in the world are on AEW right now. So I feel like there is a right answer to this question, and you just gave it.
The only other possible one there would be New Japan's single division, because that's also very, very good. You get a card in there. And Tanahashi and Ishii. Oh, actually, maybe now that I've said it.
I mean, I watch New Japan, like I try to keep up, but it's definitely not my favorite product right now. And there's no like problem with it, but the thing is, I enjoy entertainment-based wrestling way more than I do sports-based wrestling. So New Japan, in that sense, is not really my thing. So maybe that's I didn't really think of it. But it has some of my favorite wrestlers as well. It has Jay White, it has Juice Robinson. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Now that I've said it, I actually am going to change my answer. I'm going to pick the New Japan Men's Division. It's really, really good. Marcus Campbell, if you could book an Impact versus AEW card, what matches would you book? To keep it simple, one male singles, one tag, and one women's, and one other match of your choice. So.
The male singles, like, it's the first thing that came to mind. I would maybe do, like, Chris Bay versus maybe Cody Rhodes, like, title for title.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Moxley, Sami Callihan. I think they would have...
That's also really cool.
Yeah, I think they would have a brutal match where we would beat seven bells out of each other. I think that'd be pretty cool. Motor City Machine Guns versus...
FTR?
I mean, I was going to... Yeah, actually, I'm going to say FTR. You know, I was originally going to say the Young Bucks, but we kind of saw that a lot, like, during ROH. So if I'm trying to build, like, dream matches, then, yeah, you're absolutely right. Doing Motor City Machine Guns versus FTR. God, that'd be great.
And the women's match, maybe I'll do, like, Penelope Ford versus maybe Kylie Rae. Again, that doesn't sound, like, too wild because Kylie Rae was in AEW, but we didn't really get to see much of her.
Yeah, I'm gonna, because I'm a big Jordynne Grace mark, so I'm gonna pick Jordynne Grace and Hikaru Shida, because I just think that those two would work really, really well together. Dylan from Cork says, what realistic veterans would you like to see answer Cody Rhodes TNT Open Challenge? I'd love to see Rob Van Dam answer the call. Realistic veterans to answer this.
Define realistic.
Well, I mean, yeah, like Taz wouldn't be a realistic option. He can't get in the ring anymore. But I think, like, if Lance Storm can still go, I'd love to see Lance Storm answer the call. That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, I like, people are making fun of it, but I like this, like, Cody Rhodes versus wrestling Twitter war. So I'm, like, more excited to see, like, new faces, new quote-unquote new faces, faces that are new to the wider audience. I was really pumped for Warhorse appearing. That was really, really cool. So I would like to see more of that rather than, like, an ex-WWE or ex-TNA person.
Even... DDP, I think it'd be a lot of fun if we're looking at veterans and stuff, particularly with the connection with the Nightmare family and everything. But yeah, like, I'm also really into this whole, like, I love them bringing in Warhorse. I think if he didn't have his ROH connections, Danhausen would 100% be brought in to do something. But I don't think it's going to happen with his ROH deal, basically. Callum says, there's a lot of what ifs in wrestling. What if CM Punk never walked out in 2014? What if Vince was guilty in the steroid scandal? What if Vince Russo never joined WCW? What are some wrestling what ifs that you've thought about while being a wrestling fan?
Like, mine that I've thought of are way, like, smaller and, you know, like, to some people less significant. But to me, like, the first thing that came to mind is, remember that moment when, like, someone attacked Roman Reigns backstage? And Buddy Murphy kind of happened to walk by. And that kind of started his main roster career. I'm a huge Buddy Murphy fan. So to me, like, every once in a while, I, like, think about it and I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, thank God that happened. I really loved their match. Like, I'm not a fan of Roman Reigns. Like, I think he's, like, he's great, but he's just not my thing. You know, I'm not, like, a mark for him. But his match versus Buddy Murphy, I loved. And their backstage segments, to me, that was, like, so much fun. And to me, like, seeing one of my favorite wrestlers, basically, Buddy Murphy, is to kind of jump in the card like that was really, really fun. So, like, every once in a while, I'm like, oh my God, thank God he just happened to exit the catering area at this point in time.
We've just passed the 1-year anniversary of that, haven't we? Who attacked Roman Reigns backstage. That feels so long ago, to be honest.
Time flies.
I think that the two that kind of sprung to mind were, I mean, like, what if Owen had jumped at the same time Brett did to WCW, obviously. But, like, two sort of other ones that really spring to mind is, what if we never had the Time Warner AOL merger? Would WCW still have survived? Because really, that's what killed WCW. It wasn't their low ratings. I mean, it's kind of part and parcel, but it was their low ratings and low pay-per-view buy numbers that just meant that AOL and Time Warner were just like, why do we have this? Like, let's just get rid of the business. We're spending so much money on this. Let's just get rid of it. Like, so I that one springs to mind. And what if Steve Austin hadn't broken his neck in the Owen Hart match? Like, because that, you know, that really shortened his career. So what would have happened to Steve Austin? Because he probably still would have walked out in 2003 over the Brock Lesnar thing, but would he have gone elsewhere? What would have happened to Austin? Like, I just don't know, like, you know, the what ifs of that, and how much him having his career shortened because of the neck injury. You know, we could have been having Austin matches up until present day.
I just thought of another one. Sorry, my voice is cracking because I talk so much. Like, I do YouTube podcasts, commentary, so like my voice is just out the window. But I thought of another one that's like really ridiculous to some people, but to me, like, I still think about it and I'm still like gutted about it, because back in the day when Miz was Mr. Money in the Bank, he had this whole like team, I guess you could say, with Alex Riley, right? Mm-hmm. And I was a really huge fan of them at that time. And I'm still a fan of Miz, of course, but like Alex Riley is kind of done for in wrestling. But yeah, I used to be a huge fan of his. And then like this deep push of his started after they broke up with Miz. And I'm not going to like describe the stuff that I've seen or heard, because at the end of the day, it's not official information, nothing is proven. But yeah, some backstage conflict. Deepush. And before that happened, he was kind of starting his feud with Jack Swagger. And he was kind of chasing the title. And I really, like, sometimes I think, like, what would have happened? Because I really feel like at that time, he had it all to be the new John Cena. Like, he had everything. Yeah. Like, he had the looks, he had the charisma, he had the crowd. At some point again, for a brief moment in time, he had the
excellent
crowd.
Entrance music.
Excellent entrance music and a better in-ring than John Cena. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he could be like the new big thing, but then that happened. So that really makes me sad to this day.
The other one that just sprung to mind then, because you kind of sort of mentioned, you know, sort of failed pushes or things that sort of stopped, you know, before they should have done. Man, what if John Cena hadn't beaten the Nexus at SummerSlam? Like, what if?
Oh my God! I'm such a Nexus fan, and I'm a Stu Bennett fan, a Wade Barrett fan. I had an interview with him; it's on my channel, and he talks about it a lot, because I feel like it was this like very much like a turning point for his career in WWE and for Nexus on the whole. And yeah, it's really, it's a shame that that happened.
Real shame.
Yeah.
Carter Nelson said, I was watching some of the old WrestleTalk, listening rather, to some of the old WrestleTalk Extra podcast, and found out that you guys were surprised JBL was the NXT general manager. But did you know, along with JBL, Dusty Rhodes was also an NXT general manager? Yeah, to clarify, we weren't surprised that he was. I'd forgotten that he was. And I was just like, oh yeah, that was a weird thing.
Yeah, I kind of remember both of those. Like, no gaps here.
The thing with JBL that makes me laugh about it is that he didn't, like, he was the NXT general manager, but clearly wasn't watching the product. And so he was like doing commentary on Raw and SmackDown, but not knowing who any of the people were. It was really, really bizarre.
That's very on brand for him, actually.
Yeah, totally. Dwayne the Gronk Johnson says, with teams like FTR and Gallows and Anderson being released on Black Wednesday and two or three of the New Day now out injured, do you think WWE still has any hopes of building their tag team division? I don't think the impromptu tag teams are the solution, and WWE should just merge the Raw SmackDown tag teams into one and debut championship belts that don't look like 50p coins. What do you guys think? I do hate those tag belts. I think they're so hideous.
I really don't.
Yeah, you don't like them?
No, I mean, I like them. I really don't hate them.
I'm hideous belts.
I think I have some like unconventional opinions on title designs, because like everyone seems to hate the titles that they like, because I like the colorful strap. I used to really like the old cruiserweight title, but then the titles that I dislike, many people tend to like, because I don't really like, you know, like vintage inspired title designs for some reason. I feel like they're like think of the past at this point. So okay. I really, really dislike the AW women's title.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan
the
of that
size
one.
Is like a problem.
Yeah, it's tiny. Yeah.
Like, it looks horrible. It's a problem. And regarding the WWE tag team division, I don't think that like all hope is lost, like abandon all hope, the who enter here. But like as of now, yes, like I heard someone point out that Cesaro and Nakamura are like literally the only established active tag team on the roster. Yeah. So that's kind of sad.
Yeah. It is sad, man. You got Heavy Machinery, I guess, is the only other tag team.
Yeah, but where are they? Like, what happened? Like, where's Tucker?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, who knows? I think with WWE, it's a case of, and like this has been, you know, wildly reported, it's been said a lot, Vince doesn't like tag team wrestling. So it's never really going to be treated seriously, even if they had a lot of tag teams anyway.
And it's a shame because, like, I always say that, like, when I discuss AEW, for instance, that tag team wrestling is like a whole genre in itself, right? Like, it's so different to one-on-one to singles wrestling, and it's very like it's very different, and it's so much like broader. There are so many opportunities for storyline building, for character building. So it's a shame that like the biggest company in the world treats it like an afterthought.
Adam Pearson said, "Hey guys, this is my first mailbag question. My name is Adam Pearson, but I'm not to be confused with the other Adam Pearson you had on your podcast, which was great, by the way. I'm not too sure if you've had this question before, but do you think that a match? But what do you think is the match that over-delivered the most of all time? For me, it's Roman Reigns versus The Big Show at Extreme Rules. In my opinion, it was a match that had no right to be anything special because of the bad booking of Reigns at the time, but far exceeded my expectations for a solid 8 out of 10 match. Looking forward to hearing your suggestions." Yeah, matches that way over-delivered. That's a really good one. Do you know what, actually? It's Gargano Almas from NXT. Really? Only because like it was like the opening match on the card, and it wasn't like this, you know, major storyline at the time. But it had been like the best match of the night and one of the best matches of the year. Like I think it just caught a lot of people by surprise, being like, "Oh wow, oh god, that match was great."
To me, I think that was the greatest wrestling match in history, the Edge versus Orton. Again, I don't want to like to sound like I'm underestimating any of their abilities, right? But just the way that it was marketed and the show that it was going to happen on, like it did not feel like it's going to be actually really good, but it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a nice surprise.
It's helpful when you can edit and reshoot things. Alex Kuckman, hello, you beautiful people. My question carries on from the one last week. Before I ask, imagine this. Right, okay, so here we go. Imagine this. Okay. Vince McMahon is no longer with us. Triple H is in charge. That being said, do you think we'll ever get WWE versus AEW pay-per-view match storyline or anything, one-off or annually? Far-fetched, but if anyone fancied doing it, I believe Triple H would. After all, he likes what's best for business. It'll probably never happen on Vince's watch. So do you think that if when Triple H takes over, we'll get sort of a supercard show?
I don't think so. Because the thing that holds WWE back in a sense in a lot of things is not solely Mr. McMahon. WWE is a huge company. It's a public company. It has stocks. It has this whole board, you know? So All of its decision making is very like wary of those things. And I can't really blame them for most of it. So I really don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm not sure I think it's going to happen either. Like, I think that, you know, people do, you know, think like, it's going to be much better when Triple H takes over. And that very well may be true. But Triple H is also, you know, he's a Vince McMahon project and he's carrying a lot of the same business practices that Vince McMahon has got and kind of the same beliefs. So I'd be surprised. I wouldn't hate to see it, but I would be surprised if it ever happened.
Yeah, I do think that WWE will change once Triple H is in charge, if that ever happens again. But I don't think that we will see it like completely changing its direction or like opening up to other companies. I don't think that's going to happen.
Jobber JJ says, "Hello, everyone. My question is about the slow shift in viewers not watching WWE and watching AEW. Over the last few weeks, the key demo and youngsters are not watching WWE, including NXT, and are tuning into AEW. Obviously, Vince is part of the problem with Raw and SmackDown, but NXT for years has been the product to watch. And since moving to USA, mostly the over 50s are watching. My question is, why do you think that is?" I think on this one, excuse me, it's a case of that younger demographic was watching NXT because they wanted something different. Like when it was on the network, when it was on the WWE network, obviously we don't know what the viewing figures for it were, but I kind of figured that the hardcore wrestling audience were watching that product because that's the product they wanted to see. With AEW came on, they were like, oh, actually, let's just move over and watch this one. Right. Like they're also doing it, and I want to watch that product. I want to watch something different. Like you're almost watching NXT as a rebellion thing against Raw and SmackDown, and now you've got a product that's not actually part of the WWE system, so you've got even more of a rebellion thing to watch against it. Whereas the over 50s have been watching WWE their whole life and have just carried on watching that with NXT. I guess like that's a possible theory I have.
Like at this point, the people who like stopped watching NXT and started watching AEW, that's basically me. Like I wouldn't say that I've stopped watching NXT completely. No, not at all. Like I still try and like catch up and be up to date and like see, you know, like the shows. But the thing is, to me right now, AEW is way more exciting to watch, primarily, well, A, because of the roster. Because like most of the wrestlers that are like, well, I wouldn't say like my favorite wrestlers, but like current favorites that are really fun to watch for me personally are on AEW. And then it's like primarily because of how AEW is more open-minded with their like matches, with their stipulations, with their weapons and such kind of thing, you know, because like there was a time in my life when I was solely a WWE fan. And I think we all started there one way or the other. But when I started discovering other wrestling, I found this kind of new, whole new world, you know, of like hardcore wrestling, of deathmatch wrestling even, of like very different, like creative weapon use of stipulations, such kind of things. And NXT doesn't really provide that. While their product is really great and they have amazing matches, I still, you know, need this kick at this point. And like, throughout this whole like COVID thing, for some reason, again, I don't know why, but just the format of the audience, the format of the like the show, the way it's shot, to me, AEW feels more alive. It feels more like more exciting to watch. That's why I sometimes ditch NXT and just watch AEW.
And lastly, Sterling Van says, why are you guys saying that Drew's first real challenger is Randy Orton for his WWE Championship reign? I get that Dolph was filler and Bobby was only built up to be brought down, but I thought he and Seth had a very good feud. I think to answer that, because obviously that's, you know, towards Ali and I, because we've been saying, you know, we're on Raw, it's like, oh, Randy Orton feels like Drew's first real challenger for the title. Because, and the reason for that is because Seth lost twice at WrestleMania. And then went into a WWE Championship feud. He didn't feel like he was at the tippity top of his game. Yeah, they did have a good feud, but like it never felt like Drew's championship reign was in trouble. Whereas like now it does against Randy Orton, which is where the real challenger thing comes from, sort of like in my mindset. But like, what do you think of Drew's championship run?
Yeah, he's been really dominant. And I also like the Rollins feud, but yeah, I agree. It didn't really feel like he was the person who can take this title away from him. And not even because of the losses. I mean, of course, because of that partly. But the thing about Rollins is, even though like right now, I like his gimmick the most out of his whole entire WWE run. Mm-hmm. And I am very much not a Seth Rollins fan. Like people who know me know that I strongly dislike this person, but his current like Monday Night Messiah thing has been really enjoyable to watch, and I found myself like liking him, so that's been really fun. But compared to his other like storylines, his other gimmicks, like when he was affiliated with the Authority and this kind of stuff, right now compared to that, he doesn't really seem strong or dominant whatsoever. He's like a strong mid-carder right now to me.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't feel like he could actually take that title. So I think I can agree with you saying that Orton is like the only first like threat to this reign.
So Xenia, to get to know you a little bit more, when did you become a wrestling fan?
Actually, I started watching wrestling when I was, I think, 11 years old. And I know that's not extremely early because I've met people who've started watching at like 6 years old. But I feel like that's more common for Americans or even British people because you have easier access to wrestling. But to me, when I first saw it on TV, that was in London because my mom had work in London. So I kind of stumbled upon it on TV and I've been hooked since then.
Oh, amazing. So like, what is it? Like, is it easy to access WWE and AEW in Russia at the moment? Like, is it like, do you have like a channel that it airs on, or are you watching it via other means?
The thing is, like, right now, when you ask me in July 2020, it is easy, well, kind of easy to get access to WWE on TV because it's on cable. Like, it's not on a national TV channel, but it's on cable. But the thing is, they started airing it there maybe 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh, wow.
Yes. AEW is not on TV, but of course, I can get a Fight TV subscription just like anyone anywhere else in the world to watch it. Mm-hmm. But the thing about WWE is it used to be on Russian TV in, I think, the end of the 90s and early 2000s. But the thing is, it wasn't really marketed in a proper way, in a way that it was presented as a humorous show. And the Russian announcers were like legitimately like shoot making fun of it. So that formed like a pretty, you know, like unpleasant public image for wrestling in Russia. So I feel like from that time and up to now, it has been a struggle and a whole load of work to kind of clear up the image of wrestling in Russia. But yeah, there was like this huge gap of many years that it wasn't on TV, and now it's finally back.
Do you watch the pay-per-views in English, or do you have the Russian? Because I'm always curious as to how good the other announcing teams are, because the English ones are usually quite bad.
Are they?
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, the Russian announce team, the WWE Russian announce team, right? There's this Russian announce team that works for WWE that do the Double Network voiceovers. They're pretty good, but I don't really watch pay-per-views with Russian commentary. Like, I watch most of my wrestling with English commentary because, like, I know English. Like there's no sense for me to really turn on the Russian commentary. But then there's this other commentary team that does commentary for Raw and SmackDown that air on Russian cable. Those are different people. They're also pretty good, and one of them is a good friend of mine.
Oh, really?
So that's why I'm saying that. And they are both representatives of IWF Russia, which is the biggest and the oldest wrestling promotion in Russia, which is based in Moscow. So those are the people who have been doing an immense service to wrestling in Russia on the whole, and to WWE in Russia, by promoting wrestling, by doing shows, by running this wrestling school that they have. So I might be biased because I don't judge them solely on the commentary, but I just know that those are very important people for the wrestling scene in Russia. So I can't help but respect them.
That was going to be, because so I first sort of discovered you because I heard some people saying that you were doing like amazing work and sort of like promoting wrestling in Russia, which I as a sort of, you know, a guy living in London, I'm not really aware of the Russian wrestling scene. So it was, you know, it's very interesting to kind of like learn about this. So what was the Russian wrestling scene been like for, say, the last 20 years or so? Like, is it something that has sort of boomed recently, or is it something that's always been there?
It's funny that you said 20 years, because this promotion, IWF Russia, that's the biggest and the oldest, is 20-ish years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, wrestling in Russia is 20 years old. Like, it's not it's not of legal drinking age in the US. And we have those, like, two of the biggest promotions. One is based in Moscow and the other one in St. Petersburg. Then there are several smaller ones in other cities, and I know there's one more in St. Petersburg, and then there are some annual shows, but that's pretty much it. Like, you can count them like on the fingers of your one hand. But all of those people are doing really, really, really great job. And I feel like, yes, they have been on the rise recently. We've been having sold outs at IWF Russia. We've been doing shows. I'm kind of affiliated with them. You know, I'm not like a part of the company, but I'm their info partner. And we've been having bigger venues. So it's been really, really fun. But I feel like we've had this thing with, you know, like, international wrestlers and like the school for the longest time, for all of those 20 years, I think.
I mean, it's really, really cool. Like, I'm always kind of fascinated to sort of hear, you know, like what the wrestling scenes are like elsewhere, because, you know, here in the UK, we had like a really booming, and still do have a very, very booming wrestling scene over here. So you've done a lot of, like, you know, shows in America as well, and sort of around the world. What are some of the best shows you've been to?
I feel like everyone's like sick and tired of me talking about it at this point, but I just talk about it so much, like on every like podcast that I go on. My Double or Nothing trip was my absolute favorite wrestling trip that I've ever made. And I say this as a person who has been to WrestleMania twice. But that was like the absolute favorite. But I think it wasn't, well, it was because of the show. It was, I think, the best show that I've seen live. Evolution is a close second. But I feel like part of the reason why it's my favorite is because it was my first wrestling trip that I made as a pretty established wrestling YouTuber. Like, people kind of knew of me at that point in time already. Cool. And I had like a lot of friends to meet. I had interviews. I had all kinds of fun stuff to do. So I think the reason why it's my favorite is because it was the most purposeful one.
Yeah. What got you started being a wrestling YouTuber?
Well, I started my channel about 2 years ago, and I recently had my 100th video that is up on my channel right now, which I don't know if that's a lot. It doesn't feel like a lot. Like, it's been 2 years and it's just 100. Like, when I saw that it's like nearing the 100 mark, I was like, just 100? All this work for just 100 videos? But yeah, I've always been, like, throughout my whole adult life, I've been a wrestling fan, and I spent so many years getting this higher education. I have a master's degree, and I've always thought that eventually I need like a real job. Like, I need to settle down for a real grown-up job, which I do have because I need it. But at some point I kind of stopped and thought to myself, hey, like, there's this thing in my life, wrestling, that I love so much, that I love the most, and that I've loved for over 20 years, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. So why not try and make it my career, or at least make it my side hustle? So that's what prompted me to start my channel.
How was, I mean, this seems like such an obvious question. I've kind of been asking of everyone who's been on the show, but like, how has, like, you know, the coronavirus and COVID-19 kind of affected the output of work that you were doing? Like, or, you know, did it cancel any plans that you had? Like, you know, what how has it been over in Russia?
I mean, it's been really complicated here in Russia, because the thing is, we didn't have like an official quarantine, because if they were to announce the quarantine, they would have to pay people who didn't work. But instead, they announced like a nationwide like vacation, basically. And at first, people took it as a vacation and started going out. And we had like a huge increase in cases. And then our president had to do like another TV appearance and go like, guys, hey, I said vacation, but it's not actually a vacation. Stay home. So yeah, but in regards to my content, it didn't really affect it that much, because like nowadays I mostly do like think pieces, unboxings, such kind of things, so I do that from home basically, so that didn't really do anything. But of course I've had less event vlogs because there hasn't been any wrestling. But regarding my international stuff, I usually make like one or two wrestling trips a year, because anything more than that is too difficult, expensive, and, you know, just a whole shebang. So I guess, yes, this year I'm left without an international wrestling trip, which is a shame, because it's not something that I, you know, do all the time, something that I can do at any point in time. But yeah, I hope the borders open soon, because I'm really like, you know, I love to travel, and not just for wrestling, but for wrestling in particular. And I really feel stuck here right now. It's like I'm getting sick and tired of sitting at home. So I guess it's taken a more of a like mental toll than it has actually affected my content.
What's your favorite place you've ever visited?
Oh, it's such a tough question. I've been to 20 countries.
Wow.
And to about 50 cities over those 20 countries. So it's a really difficult question. Like, one of my absolute favorite places, as you said, New York is always mentioned on your podcast. New York is definitely one of my absolute favorite places in the whole entire world. A close second would be Singapore.
Mm.
I also really like Hong Kong. I really like China on the whole because at some point I had a job. This company was like partially situated in Russia and partially in China. So mm-hmm. I had to make several trips to China to attend conferences, to like run the booth, such kind of things. And I really got to visit several cities in China. And I really got to talk to a lot of Chinese people there and to, you know, try the food and see the sights and this kind of thing. And it really made me like fall in love with China. So I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, one of those people who are like very immersed in the culture and who like think that they are like a long lost, you know, Chinese citizen. Of course not. But as a place, you know, to visit and to experience, it's definitely one of my favorite countries that I've been to.
Amazing.
Also recently I found like a newfound love for Romania, and the thing is like my great grandmother I think used to live in Romania. She was Romanian. And Romania is the country that I haven't visited, even though it's like somewhere in my roots. I haven't visited it for the longest time, and I went there for the first time last year, I think, or maybe it was 2018, I can't remember, but somewhere there. And I didn't really think much of it, but when I actually saw it with my own eyes, the capital, Bucharest, right, it's like, it's such a beautiful city, and the weather there is amazing. Like, it's like plus 24-ish year-round. Like, I've been there in November, and then I've been there, like, in the spring, and it's the same weather. And it's really nice and warm, and the food is really great. So that's been like one of the like surprising discoveries to me. Romania is really a really amazing country, really worth visiting.
Well, before I let you get out of here, what can we expect from your channel in the upcoming weeks?
Well, it's gonna be fun because the live wrestling in Russia is returning. And there is an IWF Russia show on the 1st of August. So you're going to expect a vlog. You're going to expect some interviews with some super new, super fresh talent who debuted like 2 weeks ago, who had like their first wrestling match 2 weeks ago. And also among the things that are in the works, maybe not in the following weeks, but in the following months, definitely. When I went to Romania, I actually went to a wrestling school there, which is like the first and only wrestling school in Romania. And it was founded by an Irish guy like a year ago or like 2 years ago. So Romania is the country where wrestling is like even younger than it is in Russia. It's like literally just starting. There's like literally a total of like 15 wrestlers in the country. So yeah. I filmed like a huge video including interviews and like snippets of their life as trainees in a country where wrestling is basically non-existent. So that's really, really curious to see. And that video is going to be hopefully up in the following months. It's a load to edit, but bear with me. But it is going to eventually go up. So a lot of fun things are coming up on the channel.
Amazing. And I'm also going to take this opportunity because I've not been able to speak to anyone from Russia since we did. I don't know if you saw the No Rolls Barred episode we did, which is our improv D&D game that we do. We are based around wrestling, and I played a Russian character for the very first time. I played someone who was not from England, which means I had to do a Russian accent.
Let's
so hear it. I'm going to take this time to formally apologize for the Russian accent that I did on the show. It was Alexei Tetris that I played on the show. I was Whiplash.
It does not sound like a Russian accent.
Oh,
no.
Come on, it's not that bad.
Do you want me to like turn off my English pronunciation and like talk in English the way that I would in Russian?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, this is how I would talk if I wouldn't add an English pronunciation to my Russian. So this basically is kind of authentic Russian accent, but really it isn't, because like when I speak Russian, you can hear that my accent is different. So like you would not talk like that, you know? But the thing is about Russian accent, I'm sorry if I'm like digressing, but it's just really...
No, go for it.
The thing about Russian accent is that the things that you like try to add to make it sound Russian do not actually come through when an actual Russian speaks English. Like, say, the hard R's, right? I don't really do that, like when I speak English, right? And I don't really slip up that much. Because this R sound is not that hard to replicate with the Russian speech apparatus. But the thing that is hard to replicate are the two things. The first one is the basically the vowels, basically every single vowel. Because in Russian, all the vowels are kind of flat. Like there isn't like a second pronunciation to a vowel. It's just pronounced the way that it is in the alphabet. While in English, a letter can be pronounced different ways. And that's where we slip up. And the other thing is the TH sound, like this sound. We do not have it. And it's a really weird thing to do with your mouth when you're speaking. So those are the two that you hear Russian people slip up on the most.
Well, I mean, as I said, I wanted to take this time to formally apologize to an actual Russian person for my accent that I attempted on that show. But thank you so much, Xenia, for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Once again, can you please plug your social media channels and your YouTube channel?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm at Xenia Did That with an X on almost every platform. I have a Twitter, I have an Instagram, and of course I have my YouTube channel, youtube.com/XeniaDidThat, where I post wrestling-related videos that I would really like you guys, your viewers, to see. And if you were to click that subscribe button, that would mean a lot to me because I'm still just starting and every single subscriber matters so much, you don't even know. So I would be really grateful if you guys did that.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to have another podcast out tomorrow. Pete and Andy will be doing the SmackDown review, and then it's business as usual next week. Raw review of myself and Ollie, AEW review, and the NXT review with Laurie and Adam. And then we'll have another special guest for next Friday's magazine show. Xenia, thank you once again for joining us. And take care, everyone. Have a good weekend. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.